You're listening to the Mutual Audio Network. Have a good day.
Sonic Speaks. So we'll get started.
That's my mixer. Well, it's not mine, but I have one like that. That's a UB.
My mixer has ice. For most audio drama fans, you know who that is. In this modern age, there's probably a handful of extremely distinct actors that have been in a number of audio performances in the last 15 years. I'm Jack Ward, and welcome to another season of Sonic Speaks. It's been a while, but as we are part of the new Mutual Audio Network, I'm looking forward to exploring the many different voices in our community. I've been waiting for a good face-to-face conversation with tonight's guest. Last summer, I was invited with a whole raft of East Coast and New England audio drama folk to Steve Schneider's place. I took the ferry over from Yarmouth and got picked up by my old friend, Fred Greenhalgh. We recorded a great interview that somehow got lost, unfortunately, and settled with a bunch of old and new friends at Steve's. One of those old friends was, and still is, the incredible Joe Stofko. So let's tune in to that interview now. I apologize for all the background party sounds, but it was a pretty hopping place, and it makes for a good thick audio bed. So without further ado, my chat with friend and actor, Joe Stofko. I'm here with Joe Stofko in the flesh, and it's so good to see you. I mean, we've worked together for some years now. I've been an admirer of your work. Joe has done a ton of different acting jobs and various different shows.
Well, I don't know about a ton, maybe 100 pounds.
100 pounds, that's for sure. I mean, there was stuff that you had done with, was it Tansy? Tansy,
yes.
Undercrypt?
Yes.
I think it's some of the first stuff I heard that you had done.
Yeah.
Is that some of the first stuff you did as radio drama?
No, I think the first thing I did was for Misfits.
Okay. Yes, there was a lot of Misfits stuff in there too as well. Good point. Yeah.
And then Tansy, Broken Sea.
Right.
So, and there have been a bunch more, obviously. Campfire Radio Theater.
For sure.
So.
You were a favorite of many different producers, including me. Electrify Kuna stuff.
Thank you, thank you.
But I know that Bill Hallwig loved using your voice for a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah.
What did you do with Bill?
There were two major things that I did with Bill, both for Broken Sea, obviously. And one of them was the Strange Case of Matthew Hornblower. I think that's what it was called.
That was a great show. It's actually one of Jeffrey Billard's favorite shows.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why he keeps loving to cast you as well.
And then the other one, I'm sorry to say that I can't remember the name of it.
Sure.
But I played the voice in it. It was it was sort of a spy drama where this person was being held and I was the voice. And
wow.
This booming, thundering voice about "you will comply" type thing. You know,
what got you involved in audio drama? Like, do you have a love of it from a long time ago, or?
Well, yeah, but that isn't what pushed me in. I think what happened was I was doing stage production work, and I still do stage work today. Mm. I knew, you know, like old-time radio stuff, and I discovered that, wow, you could get on the internet and you could hear things that were being produced today. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. And then I found out that, gee, I could audition for some of this stuff. And the reason that I did was because I thought of it as a vehicle for furthering character development for stage work.
Right.
So audio drama work, as I got into it, was my classroom. It was for me to work on being able to develop stronger characterizations for the stage.
Audio drama, I think that's one of the most strong aspects for an actor is characterization.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so did you contact Captain John Tadrazak then for Misfits Audio, or how did you do your first?
It was either, the first one was a Strange Stories episode, and it was probably both Cap and Mike Murphy.
Right.
And that was the springboard. That was what, I think that episode was called "You Are What You Eat."
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was fun.
And I played a blowhard officer, a military officer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. And from there, you must have gotten a lot of requests then from people.
I did. That's one of the things that I think I'm most grateful for, is the fact that I still do audition from time to time, but many times I'll get an email, in some cases even a phone call, and say, I have something that I have you in mind for. Would you be willing to do it? And that's kind of nice. I toot my horn, beep, beep. That's very humbling, really it is.
Sure. Is there any particular thing that you're looking for when you get a role? I notice you're happy to help out with me with anything. It's great. And is there things that are like real meaty for you that you're looking for?
Not necessarily. I'll be offered things that are pretty substantial, and I'll be offered things that are, a half a page of dialogue, and or not even a half a page, maybe just three or four lines. And that's fine. I kind of like do it all. I've been not leery of, but less welcoming with things that are a little bit off the deep end, where there's a lot of foul language anything where a character is being particularly demeaning to another character.
Sure.
So I don't like to. And there's some drama that, you look at it, and the first time you look at it, you say, "Whoa, really?" And then you read the script and you say, "Well, this is pretty good. Okay, yeah I want to do this." And if it's something that I haven't seen before, people that I've worked with before, like you, for example,
right.
John Ballantyne, for example.
Campfire Radio Theater.
Yeah. Mike Murphy.
Sure.
If I'm asked, generally I don't even need to see the script. I'll say yes. Okay. And there are other times where there's other people that I haven't worked with that much, and I don't know them that well, and I'll ask to see the script first. And usually everybody's forthcoming with that. So
right.
Let's see. There's a lot.
Yeah. No, I know. I put you on the spot for that. But I'm curious as to some of the things that you found really exciting.
I did that thing for you, in fact. It was me and an actress out of New York whose name escapes me right now, Gita Arbor.
Right. Yeah.
And that, I liked that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Borrowed Time, I think, is that one where you sort of played out of touch, or you lost from one parallel dimension to another.
Yeah, that was a very intriguing story.
Yeah, thank you. That was a fun show.
You did write that.
I did write that, yes,
you did.
Of course, yeah.
So, and once I knew you wrote it, I said, I'm in.
Thank you.
That was a very, I love the way it ended, because it was very, the character is very introspective as he's about to, as things are about to end.
And so it's fragmenting constantly. Constantly. I'm always amazed, and I think X Minus One is one of those shows that inspired me when I was a kid, because I'm interested in speculative science fiction. Where are we going with the things that we come up with, and what are some interesting ideas, and what would happen next? So those classic science fiction writers, too, beyond the audio drama, always found it really interesting.
I just did I didn't do it yet. It's sitting there, and it's not. And here's another instance where it's not a big role. It's relatively small, but it's based off. I believe it's based off an X Minus One script, or maybe it's a story by great scientific science fiction writer. And it's not Heinlein, and it's not Asimov. It's
Bradbury, maybe.
Ray Bradbury. Thank you. And I looked at the script, and I said, "Oh yeah, this is great. I want to do this." And I contacted the producer, and forgive me, I can't remember who it is. I said, I'm pretty sure that the story was also adapted for either a Twilight Zone episode or a Outer Limits episode.
Right.
Pretty sure.
It's quite possible, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's, you're about to do that one, are you?
Yes. Yeah.
So do you do a lot of narration too? Like, do you do audiobooks? And
I've done audiobooks, and I find that they're interesting. They're extremely time consuming. To get an hour's worth of audio that's going to go to the audiobook publisher, you have to obviously put an hour's worth of material and get that done. And then once you've done that, you have to go through and you've got to fix everything that's wrong with it, because there always will be something wrong with it.
Sure.
And you have to dress it up. You have to fix it up. You have to maybe punch in a line or two that you don't like the way it sounded. And that's just your critique of it, because when it goes to the author, for example, it may come back, and to get that finished hour in an audiobook may take 5-6 hours of work,
right,
or more. And that's the first audiobook I did in doing, and I was working full time at the time, so this was just being done in the evenings and on weekends. It took me about 3 months.
Wow.
You know,
have you done many since then?
No, I've done two.
So you enjoy doing the drama side more than
Because it's not because it's a quick in and out, but because it's a quick in and out.
I get you. We recorded Borrowed Time. We got on Skype.
Yes.
And we practiced it, and then we recorded it. And it was the first time I had a chance to do that, because mostly I do stuff in-house and the whole bit.
Right.
Do you have a preferred way of working when you're doing audio drama?
I love to work alongside actors and actresses. And obviously, that's in this realm, it's not always a possibility. Many times our characters are being developed and recorded in a home studio, and that's what everybody else is doing too. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's great to say, hey, if you listen to this particular production, you'll hear not only me, but you'll hear actors or actresses from all over the world, which makes it really fascinating in a real way, very fascinating. The biggest challenge when working in in that way is that as you look at the script, you have to perceive the way you believe your scene partner is going to react to a line that you're delivering. And if you are good at imagining that and providing several takes of a line in response to the person that the other actor that isn't there in the room with you, if you're good at that, then that's terrific. And if you're not so good at that, you listen to the production at the end and say, oh, man, I could have delivered that line differently and it would have sounded so much better.
Are you doing a lot of retakes at times, or would you prefer to do retakes if you find out that a line could be done differently?
Oh, yeah. If a producer says, hey, Joe, would you mind, you know, taking line 45 and line 122 and recutting for me with a different,
different take on. That's great. Because as a director, you always wonder how much to push, right? You always wonder how much time. This is something that you do for free for the most part. Mm-hmm. You also work, you know, professionally as well. So you always wonder, how much am I taking away from this person's time? We don't want to remove the fun factor,
right?
But we also want to be able to get the best performance. And I think you made a good point that if you want to listen to it, you want to hear that you gave your best performance too.
It's
like a calling card for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I will never be upset that a producer or a director or a writer would come to me and say, please, can you recut these lines? Absolutely, no problem. In fact, I know that if you see as I deliver the lines to you in an email, I always say, anything you need redone, let me know.
Right. So. Speaking of writing, have you done any writing on your own? Tell me about some of the shows you've written.
I've written some concepts, and I've written one show, which my biggest gripe about it is that I'm too involved in it. I wrote it, I produced it, I narrated it, and I portrayed one of the characters. This was adapted from a story, just a plain short science fiction story that I had written probably 15 years ago. And I thought to myself, hey, I've got some audio drama work under my belt now, and I'll bet I could do something with that story. So I grabbed that story, and I started working on it. And I said, yeah, this is going to be okay, I think. So, and then I said, well, no, it needs something. It needs something to surround it. It's as a standalone, it's a little bit on the short side. And as a standalone, it kind of needs something. It needs a little gravy to go with the meat, you know. So, so what I did was I created an imaginary place, which is a general store. I pictured it in my mind as being a country store in the country somewhere. So that's the way I wrote it. I described the store as a narrator. I described the store, and I described a pot-bellied stove in the store, and the shopkeeper and his wife, and they lived in an apartment up over the store, and I described the building and all, and the fact that in the back of the store, I said that there was a room, a room on the left side of the store where merchandise was held to be brought out to the shelves whenever, and on the right side was a room that had a smaller pot-bellied stove and a wood-burning stove, and a door that led to the outside. And this is where some of the townsfolk, the men, would gather in the evening on a cold winter's night and play some chess or some checkers, have some coffee, and tell some outlandish tales. So that was the lead-in and the wraparound to the story. And it was available on my website, which is no longer, my website's not there anymore, but it's still available at Precarious Audio.
Oh, good.
And it's called The Double.
Okay.
Yeah. Wondrous Stories, The Double.
Wondrous Stories, The Double. What are you looking for your next big project?
Money.
That's good.
Lots of money.
Lots of money, aren't we all? No, that's great. I just want to thank you for taking the time to chat and talk a little bit. Is there, just to finish us off, mm-hmm. tell us some, for those people who haven't done any audio drama acting, what are the key things somebody should work on to become a good audio drama actor?
Boy, that's a loaded question. I mean, it's a great question. Let me say, I don't know if I can answer it, but let me say this. I've worked with some very good people, talented people on stage. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get a bunch of them together and sit in a situation like we're in right now, multiple microphones, everybody holding a script, people that I'd worked with on stage and I had a great deal of admiration for as being pretty darn good actors. And when it comes to doing audio drama, they're terrible. they don't transpose the written word well into a performance, an acting performance. And that's hard to do. It's not, you know. And conversely, I've seen people who do very well, you know, taking words off a page and emoting and bringing a character to life, and yet they are terrible people on stage. Right. They don't do well on stage.
It's not necessarily a one-for-one thing. You're right. It's a various different kinds of acting chops.
Yeah.
I'm sure one could help the other, but you certainly have to certainly recognize they're totally different mediums.
Yeah, that's true. You asked, what do I want to do next?
Yeah.
Besides the money part? You know, we do an awful lot of speculative science fiction and horror stuff. There are treatments of stories that have been done before mm-hmm. by some of the great science fiction writers. I mean, that seems to be the preponderance of what we do is that. And I'd like to see, I'm doing, for Pete Lutz, I'm doing a Western.
Okay. Right.
I'm a character in a multi-chaptered Western thing.
Jake Dimes, range detective.
That's it, Jake Dimes, range detective.
That's right.
And I play a rancher, yeah. Okay. And it's a good show. It's a lot of fun. And it's got some comic elements to it, so that's kind of fun, too. I'd like to see more done in the way of drama, which was very much like Borrowed Time, even though there was a science fiction element to it.
Sure.
But there was a strong drama there.
And, yes.
And I'd like to see, if you go back and look at OTR, all the old-time radio stuff, there are some Westerns. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of comedy. Mm-hmm. Which is tough.
Yes.
Which is, you have to have a gift to write comedy. You really, I mean, or a super gift.
Yeah.
And there's drama. And out of all of the things, all of the audio drama things that I've been involved with, drama is probably the smallest piece. It's not a lot of not a lot of drama, not a lot of detective stories,
right.
Not a lot of police dramas. Mm-hmm. And I think you go back to film noir age, you know, with detectives and good old hard boiled detectives,
right?
Earl Wolf and Shel Scott. I mean, Shel Scott was Richard S. Prather, and I read all those books. That was
for sure. Well, they're fun, right?
You know, and that's something else too. I think you wouldn't believe how many books I would go through, reading a lot, and they're all paperbacks. I mean, they're all back to the Pulp Fiction stuff, which in the paperback business is really nowhere anymore, but mm-hmm. Fawcett Gold Medal and the Penguin books and all. I mean, I probably still have boxes up in the attic of of a lot of characters that I used to follow along with. And I think that, I don't know if it did, but I wonder if that had any kind of influence on me for audio drama work.
Cool.
It might have. Okay. Because when you read a book, you imagine the way things are, the way a line is delivered, the way, you know.
For sure. No, I think that's one of the things that's missing in a lot of is a strong understanding of the story from literature in that respect, which brings, like you said, deeper character than you normally get even in a television show or something like that that comes in.
Somebody asked me one time, because you asked me too about writing, and although I haven't written a lot of things, but say, how do you write? And how do you write? You write things, and things seem to write themselves, as you know.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that I find fascinating to me anyway is that when I do write, which isn't often or often enough, I see everything that I'm writing unfold like I'm watching a movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
Exactly. I tell people I'm as excited to find out what's going to happen to anybody else. I'm the first one to find out how excited.
It's like, holy crap, I didn't know he was going to do that.
That's right. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Dick.
I really appreciate it. Do you have anything you want to say about Pete Lutz now?
He didn't show up. Pete, you should have been here. We had a great time.
That's right.
It was fabulous. Jack and I had a wonderful time. There was the dancing girls were pretty. And,
that's right.
You know.
The Viking and, Amazon yeah. Centaur Pirates were in full swing.
And we had a good time. And I'm gonna be late getting home tonight, but
well,
that's okay.
Thank you again.
Hey, thank you. Night. I appreciate it, Jack. Thanks.
Take care.
This has been an Electric Vicuna production.